The Cooper Hewitt Smithsonian Design Museum is known for its exhibits of cutting-edge design, but it also has a commitment to showcasing design solutions to real-life problems. Its current exhibit, By the People, Designing a Better America, presents 60 projects from around the United States which address issues like housing, transportation, healthcare, and education. With me now to discuss the show are Cynthia Smith, Curator of Socially Responsible Design at the museum, along with representatives of two of the projects based here in New York. Joining us to talk about the Superblock retrofit is Nadine Malle, Executive Director of the Institute for Public Architecture and Senior Advisor to Community Solutions, and Christine Gaspar, Executive Director of the Center for Urban Pedagogy. She's here to discuss what is affordable housing, the What is Affordable Housing Toolkit, and also rent regulation rights. And I'm very pleased to welcome you all to our show. Hello.
Hello.
Cynthia, this is the third in a series of exhibits of socially responsible design you've curated for the museum. How do you define socially responsible design?
Socially responsible design looks at social, economic, environmental, and cultural sustainable development, kind of in a broad overview. And we've been looking at this for three different exhibitions. The first two were international in scope and really provoked a international conversation about how design can play a critical role in addressing critical issues. And now this third one, as you mentioned, By the People, Designing a Better America, which is on view at Cooper Hewitt. We're located at East 91st and 5th Avenue on Museum Mile. It's on display now through February 26th. Addresses critical issues around the United States.
The goal to make America great again? Forgive the joke. Do you have projects from every state? Did you travel around the country?
I did. I logged 50,000 miles, air and by ground. It does not include every state, but there are a whole range of approaches, differences in scale. I have the entire city of Detroit, and another one, the entire city of LA is addressed, along with smaller scale mobile health application for expectant mothers.
And what were your criteria for including a project in the show?
I was trying to show the broadest range of approaches. So a whole range of disciplines. It needed to be collaborative, working directly with community members, and addressing critical issues. It was important that it was both innovative and often used new technologies, old technologies, a whole range. I wanted a geographic spread. It had to be, I also included urban, suburban, and rural solutions. So we looked all across the U.S.
But a theme that also seems to be throughout the show is these projects often address economic inequality.
Absolutely. So the exhibition addresses multiple challenges, poverty numbers in the U.S. Even though we're arguably the richest country in the world, we still have close to 15% of our population living under the poverty line. Income equality is widening, wages continue to stagnate, and housing prices are rising. So By the People, the exhibition examines these complex and systemic issues.
Nadine, tell us about the Superblock retrofit project.
So the dominant narrative in about public housing in the United States right now is that the towers in the park buildings are failing. And the solution to that is to tear down those buildings and displace the community. And so we took an alternative approach and looked at the people and the building as the anchor assets in the community that they are and developed a proposal that supported that. And so the project up at the Cooper Hewitt is around a specific site, a specific New York City Housing Authority site in Brownsville, Brooklyn, where we look to retrofit an existing tower and add a new affordable housing compendium building as well without displacing anyone.
This is the Tilden Houses?
Yes, that's correct.
Are you working on it with the New York City Housing Authority, NYCHA?
So the New York City Housing Authority is a partner to Community Solutions. They provided us with a lot of like the electrical utility usages so that our engineers could look at how we could develop a scheme to lower their budget. But we are doing this outside of the New York City Housing Authority.
So what are you doing? I mean, you have these buildings that all look alike, like so many of what we call the projects around the city look alike. You're doing things to make them not look so much alike?
Well, so the plan is focused on working with the residents. What do the residents want to see in their neighborhood and in their development? And how do we reweave back these campuses back into the neighborhoods and also bring pride of place to the existing residents and tackle some of the issues that they're facing, like their elevators shutting down 3 times a week, that sort of thing.
You're also bringing businesses into the buildings.
Yes. So the new development that we are proposing would have a ground floor retail and community facility based on sort of the feedback that we're getting from the residents. And this is all speculative. This is something that we're working on.
And Christine, what's the Center for Urban Pedagogy?
The Center for Urban Pedagogy?
Pedagogy?
Oh, that's okay. I think both ways are fine. But we actually call it CUP for short, since we have to say it a lot. But we're a nonprofit. We're based here in New York City. And we make accessible visual explanations of complicated policy and planning issues to help people understand how those things work, particularly communities who are being impacted negatively by particular policies or particular issues. And so we collaborate with them to create visuals that help that community get the information that they need so that people can either navigate that system more effectively or can advocate for their own community needs around it.
Your project includes a What is Affordable Housing Toolkit and also rent regulation rights posters. Were both of them used to explain tenants' rights in Chinatown?
The second one was. So the rent regulation rights poster is a project that we did with a community organization in Chinatown called CAV. And they came to us and said, you know, people are being illegally evicted and being harassed by their landlords and being pushed out of their apartments. There's actually really great laws on the books that would protect them, but people don't know about the laws or they don't have access to lawyers to be able to take advantage of those rights.
Have language problems.
Right, exactly. There are language barriers. The laws are very technical. So we worked with CAV and with a group of designers called Intercollaborative to make this poster that really makes it a visual explanation.
I assume some of the people are undocumented as well and
right.
would be afraid to complain.
Exactly. And so there are all these challenges to helping people actually have the rights, you know, that are set up for them. And so the idea is that not only does the poster help CAV explain those rights to people and have people get access to those rights, but it helps them come together to organize as a community around those issues.
Is it just a coincidence, I'm throwing this out to all of you, that these two projects based in New York City both involve affordable housing?
I think what pulls them together is the fact that they engage the public. And I think that's really critical, and not only in these two, but quite a number of the projects that are included in the exhibition. Center for Urban Pedagogy worked directly with community housing advocates, and Community Solutions worked, and their work was very much informed with a direct relationship with the residents of Tilden Houses, and I think that's one of the drivers throughout this exhibition.
Christine, your toolkit illustrates ideas like the fact that a person making minimum wage can't afford to rent an apartment, not just in New York, but anywhere in the United States.
Yeah, it's a really big issue right now. When we think about affordable housing, you know, we all sort of think, well, affordable, I know what I think affordable means. But the reality is that there is a technical definition to affordability that the federal government uses. And when we're proposing, you know, affordable housing programs in cities, what is being talked about is always a specific set of populations that would be able to qualify for that housing. And so our toolkit is really about making that apparent so people know what's happening, what's being talked about, what's being proposed for their community, and how much it'll actually meet their community needs.
There are graphics in the stairwells of the museum. Were they created by CUP?
Yeah, they're generated from that toolkit that we were just discussing. And the original toolkit is actually set up to be a workshop tool that community organizers and advocates can use to run workshops to help train their constituents about how affordability really works, what it means in their community, and then so they can all kind of advocate for their own needs. And we took information from that workshop tool and applied it to, I think, 5 different New York City neighborhoods and kind of put the visuals up in the stairwell so people could see who lives in, you know, East New York, for example, and what does that mean relative to the kind of affordable housing that's being proposed in the city currently?
My guests are Christine Gaspar, Executive Director of the Center for Urban Pedagogy, CUP, Nadine Malla, Executive Director of the Institute for Public Architecture and Senior Advisor to Community Solutions, and the curator of a new exhibit at the Cooper Hewitt Smithsonian Design Museum called By the People, Designing a Better America. That's Cynthia Smith. Your title is Curator of Socially Responsible Design?
Yes, it is.
I suspect there's no other such curatorial post anywhere else in the world.
That's our understanding. Hopefully this idea of socially responsible design will start to permeate all design, so you'll no longer need that designation.
For each area of the country, was there one issue that you identified as most important?
Boy, there's a whole range. Certainly,
affordable housing, homelessness,
Climate change, climate challenges. Absolutely. I think creating more just and inclusive communities was one of the most important elements.
The show also includes projects that address housing, like the Cojote Village in Olympia, Washington, which builds housing for the homeless. How did that project come to be built there?
Well, that's a wonderful story. It really is about how the collaboration between actually the faith-based community who helped people. It was this self-organized group of homeless people who had encamped on a parking lot in downtown Olympia, Washington, was being moved off, so the churches, mosques, temples allowed them over a 7-year period to camp on their ground. While they were doing that, they were helping to change public policy so that they could find a permanent location, and together they worked to build these, I think it's 30 little cottages, single occupancy cottages on this permanent location. But what was it most important about it is the people, the residents who are working with the formerly homeless group, their attitudes were changed because of that deep relationship and collaboration they underwent.
Nadine, as an architect, do you see that this might be a model for something here in New York, where we are constantly talking about homelessness and the cost of putting homeless people into very expensive hotel rooms and apartments that are really draining the city's budget?
I think, actually, that we should be open to all sorts of solutions. I think in New York City, one of the issues is land value. So density is a real issue on how many units we can get. But I think the focus of design and design working with residents and development that grows from there is definitely something that we should do more of in New York City and throughout the country.
Are there places where we could do something similar to Quixote Village? I guess.
Well, I'm not sure in New York City because of, as Nadine says, the density, but certainly that attitude of getting involved and understanding that these are our neighbors. The statistic that shows up in the exhibition that I think many people who visit museum visitors are going through is when you use that federal guideline, 30% of your income is to be spent on rent and then the rest for everything else. 54% of New York City residents can't afford to, it's unaffordable.
They're spending over half their income or more on rent alone.
And I think it really shows that the need for supportive housing and subsidized housing, that it's a reality here. And how are we going to address that? I think the the Tilden Houses, the super block retrofit, is an incredible solution, because it really rethinks. You have all these, and Nadine can tell us how many residents throughout the city or how many buildings are like this. They're really going through a crisis right now where they need to upgrade them. They're falling in disrepair. They were built in the 60s. And so how do we do that without displacing these residents? And I think they've come up with a really smart solution that addresses it. It's a green retrofit. It helps people live in their neighborhood. Social cohesion is important. They've been living there for a long time. And then how do you there's income segregation. So how do you, only by the fact that there's so many people living in a small area, how do you then open that up some more so you get a little bit more of an urban influx and change and more economic activity? And I think they have addressed that very well, and that this could be used as a blueprint for use throughout the city.
Well, the Tilden houses are in Brownsville, Brooklyn, but there is one of the exhibits is the Rapido Rapid Recovery Housing in Brownsville, Texas. A lot of the projects focusing on housing in the show are from the Western United States. Is it easier there because there's more open space?
I know Nadine works, Community Solution works all over the U.S.
We do work all over the United States. I'm not, you know, people say if you do it in, you know, New York is so difficult. I think a lot of, I think there are challenges wherever you are trying to develop housing. That being said, I think in New York City, the New York City Housing Authority is the largest housing authority in the United States. And Brownsville has the largest concentration of public housing. And so that was why we focused in Brownsville, because if we can create a solution in Brownsville, that can be replicable throughout New York City and then throughout the country. The topology that we see in Brownsville is similar throughout the country. These are 1960s buildings, tower in the park style.
The Rapido Rapid Recovery Housing in Brownsville, Texas, was developed after a hurricane destroyed homes in the area, and that's something that we have to be concerned with all over this country. Hurricane Sandy was devastating here, but we see hurricanes and tornadoes on a regular basis throughout the United States.
Yeah, and certainly NYCHA certainly felt serious impacts from Sandy.
The other projects in the show that address housing issues are Las Abuelitas Kinship Housing in Tucson, Arizona, Living Rooms at the Border in San Diego, and the Crest Apartments in Los Angeles. Are they all designed specifically for particular populations?
Certainly the Crest Apartments in Los Angeles, that's designed by Michael Malton, architect. This is his fourth project with Skid Row Housing Trust. In this particular one, it was a solution in a suburban area, the Van Nuys area, so they created more density. L.A. is one of the few cities in the United States that's actually getting denser, and they provided supportive housing for formerly homeless veterans, which is a large population in Los Angeles. You talked about Rapido. I think what the Rapido emergency housing, that was, I included that one in the exhibition because it was, they're really rethinking the entire system of delivery of emergency housing, which I think is really important. Over and over again, these are systemic and complex issues. So designers that are working in this area are really thinking at a systemic level.
And I think what's exciting about that, actually, the entire exhibit is that, you know, when you read the contemporary press talking about innovation and all these things, you always see sort of, you know, things like Uber, you know, you see tech kind of brought up as like, this is disrupting. And I think what's happening in the projects that you see in this exhibit, it's about really bringing innovation to problems that historically underrepresented communities are really struggling with. And if there's a place we need innovation, it's there.
And it's not just housing. You have a thing called Farm Hack Tools. But before we get to that, how do these projects get designed, funded, and built? Are they always initiated by a local group that identifies a need and then creates a project to solve it?
There's a whole range of ways that these are funded, both from federal monies, local monies. I think quite a number of them were coming out of the recession with the stimulus package. But there were also a range of other ways, not just public money, but private funds.
And FarmHack Tools is a group founded by independent farmers across the country, develops and designs open source agricultural tools. You have a pedal powered tractor in the show. I'm assuming that is more affordable than a John Deere.
Well, I don't know how much a John Deere tractor costs, but I think you're probably right on that. They actually come together. So they have this online community, this platform. It's really about sharing knowledge. And then they come together offline in what they call these farm hacks. These are young farmers, hackers, designers, makers who build these machines. And this particular one that we have in the exhibition is a pedal-powered tractor. And it's a mashup of both high-tech and low-tech.
Can people build them themselves? Is kind of like IKEA for the farmer?
Absolutely. And what they're made so that you can modify them for whatever your need is.
And there's another one, Future Cycles from Michigan, a bicycle-car hybrid, a foot-powered enclosed vehicle.
They make a whole range. This group, Future People, they're out of Detroit. They're really trying to challenge the public to rethink how transportation is designed in the United States, understanding that we have all of this wonderful infrastructure, highways and roads, but over time, gasoline-powered cars are going to be gone. So what do we replace it with? And they're challenging the public to rethink this so they have mopeds and bicycles that are more efficient and then design them so that they're have the carrying capacity of a car and are the weather protection.
Other projects involve a lack of fresh foods, which is a concern here as well as other parts of the country, easily accessible health care. What projects did you find that tackle those issues?
There's one out of Chicago that I think has really gotten everyone's imagination. It addresses food insecurity in neighborhoods where they don't have brick-and-mortar produce stores. So what this group, a group of young architects, redesigned, took an old city bus, outfitted it with, it's like a one-aisle produce market, and then take it around to these food deserts, places where people don't have access to fresh produce, and then deliver that.
Now, there's a project called City Digits Local Lotto. Christine, isn't your group involved in that project?
Yeah, we some of our programs are to work with New York City public high school students to do projects looking at questions about how the city works. And that was a project that we did with Sarah Williams, who's at MIT now, looking at how lotteries work.
Hmm. There's also Red Hook Wi-Fi, a project that brings free Wi-Fi to the whole neighborhood in Brooklyn. There's so many projects in the show that we haven't talked about. Any others in the few moments we have left that you think we really should address?
Well, I love Red Hook Wi-Fi, the fact that this group of young digital stewards places a mesh network on the rooftops near public housing in Red Hook.
That should be everywhere.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
What's interesting about it, and I think it's a really good lesson, they were, this is generally an underserved neighborhood, but after Sandy, because they had the mesh network and they had been reaching out to their youth with this Digital Stewards fellowship program, they were more resilient than other neighborhoods and recovered from Sandy much quicker. And I think that really, of anything, tells a tale, that you can really build in community resilience through design.
You have another exhibit in the works?
Well, I'm starting to talk to people. I'm hoping to collaborate with curators around the world on my next exhibition. So stay tuned.
And Nadine, what happens to you after you leave Brownsville?
Well, we'll be in Brownsville for a little while.
And Christine, you're going to be in Chinatown?
We're going to be all over the city. We're working with communities that need our help.
Meanwhile, we have this exhibit at the Cooper Hewitt called By the People, Designing a Better America. It closes February 26th. Do these shows ever move? Do they ever travel?
Yes, we're in conversations with a number of folks. We're hoping to take it to Georgia, Arkansas, and places beyond.
Places that may be home to some of the projects
Certainly.
That you're exhibiting.
Certainly.
The Cooper Hewitt Smithsonian Design Museum is located at 2 East 91st Street. That's on 5th Avenue. My great thanks to Cynthia Smith, curator of socially responsible design at the museum, and my great thanks to Nadine Mahler, executive director of the Institute Solutions, and Christine Gaspar, executive director of CUP, for being on our show today.
Thank you.
Thank you.